Good afternoon, everyone. Good evening, in fact. Thank you for joining me. I know it's the last session before the big party. In fact, this is one of two sessions about B2C that I'll be presenting. The next one is the first session tomorrow, so I'm kind of bookending the big party tonight. But as I said, thank you for joining me. So this is an introduction to building apps with Azure AD B2C. Tomorrow's session will be a deeper dive into it. I'll be co-presenting with Simon Lam from Microsoft. Tomorrow we have a basic agenda. We have content that we want to cover, but in fact, if there are any questions you may be thinking about in this particular session, then certainly come along with those tomorrow, and we want to turn it into an interactive session as much as we can. But in terms of this session, well, actually, before I just take you through the agenda of this, I'll just introduce myself. So Chris Paget, I'm based in Melbourne. I work for a consulting company called Cloud, or K-Loud, Cloud with a K, as it's otherwise known. I'm an application developer, but if anything, I specialize in identity development. So that's building applications to integrate with identity systems such as Azure AD, including B2C or other online identity providers, and ensuring that those apps are secure from top to bottom. So I'll share some of that experience with you today. In terms of the agenda, I'll introduce you to the Azure AD B2C platform. I just might abbreviate that to B2C from now on. I'll take you through the basic concepts of accounts, how you authenticate users from applications, whether they be web-based, native-based, or browser-based, and a fundamental concept that I'd love you to be comfortable when you walk away from this session in terms of understanding, which is policies. And that's really policies are the secret sauce of B2C. So I'll talk about that for maybe a good 20 minutes, and then I want to spend the rest of the session in demos. So I'll create an Azure AD B2C directory for you. I'll show you how to link that to a subscription so that you can be billed for it. I'll demonstrate how you can configure applications, add identity providers to it, not only a local identity provider, but Google Plus as well. So an end user can sign themselves in using their Google account and configure policies up for different user journeys that we want users to experience with our apps, such as a sign-in journey, a sign-up one, a password reset one, for example. And then what I'll do, I guess, is to cap it off, is to customize those user journeys. So rather than having a kind of a basic branding of those user experiences as they sign themselves in or sign themselves up, I'll customize that with my own HTML. There's another session that's going on at the same time by Nick Ward, where he's going to build a TV station in 30 minutes using Azure Media Services. Don't leave now. I want to build an identity platform in 30 minutes for you, okay? So I'll take you through the steps involved in that. But before we get there, let me introduce you to the platform. So it's been available in preview for quite a long time. It went to general availability in the second half of last year, and I'll mention a few of the limitations in that general availability a little later. But what's it about? It's about whether you're providing applications to citizens, maybe you're a government agency providing applications, online services to citizens, or you're a commercial business offering online services to consumer, you might want to consider B2C as your identity and access management service to deliver those experiences to your end users. If you're building modern applications, either native-based or web-based, they will integrate well with B2C through the OpenID Connect and OAuth2 protocols. B2C is highly available. It will meet your service level requirements and scales to, and I'm not making this up, hundreds of millions of identities, okay? I don't know what the maximum number is, but it's a large number. A good example of a large number and the use case or the case study that's featured on the B2C website is the Real Madrid scenario that went live, I think it was even the year before last, or maybe might have been last year. They have 500 million fans worldwide. That's pretty much quite a large percentage of the Earth's population. Those 500 million fans are being managed by a B2C instance. So it gives you an idea of the scale that's available to you. A B2C tenant or instance integrates with an Azure AD directory, the one that you might be, or similar to the one you might be using to back your enterprise applications or your Office 365 services. But even though it does that, It's a kind of a limited edition of Azure AD directory, insofar it provides less control over the life cycle of identities. I'll describe this in a little more detail in a moment, kind of the key differences between a consumer experience with B2C and kind of your work experience with Azure AD, if that makes sense. And as I've already mentioned, and I'll demo this later, B2C, because it's kind of a citizen or consumer-facing service, you know, the engineers want to ensure that you're able to customise those experiences to those end users by bringing your own HTML to represent your particular brand. So I mentioned these key differences of a B2C experience as compared to a B2E one, kind of the enterprise directory that you might be using for enterprise apps or Office 365 today. I won't go through these one by one in detail, but the one I do want to call out is the expectation of the experience by consumers of your applications versus the reality of the office experience you'll be having with your enterprise directory today as you sign into Outlook or SharePoint Online and so on and so forth. And, you know, the expectation of the end user is a little different because the scenario is different. And that expectation has to be met by a set of interactions, otherwise known as journeys, that B2C provides to ensure that those the experience by an end consumer of your consumer-facing applications is one that can be highly branded, is enjoyable, you know, designers call them delightful experiences, one that you can customise and really bind to the brand and the feel and look of your consumer applications. You don't necessarily get that when you're logging into an Office 365 service, for example, but that's not the point. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in terms of the high-level capabilities or services that are offered by the B2C platform, really they fall into three pillars. There's authentication services, extensibility services, and integration services. So if you're building browser applications using JavaScript or native applications, whether they be Android, iOS, Windows, UWP, or Xamarin-based, or web apps running on servers, or web APIs running on servers, you can integrate all of those from an authentication point of view with a B2C instance. Later, I'll demonstrate a web app and how that can be done. And we'll get to the libraries that you will use to implement that authentication integration in a moment. Really, the powerful capabilities of B2C are in the extensibility pillar. So B2C allows you to manage accounts as local accounts, those accounts that users will sign up with an email address or a username, and that those local accounts are managed by the directory that backs your B2C instance, right? Or if you want your end users to bring identities from elsewhere, from Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, Microsoft, Amazon, you can do that as well. And users will have the choice. You can configure B2C to allow users to have the choice about the identity provider they want to use. You can manage user profiles using your B2C tenant. And those profiles can be a mix of built-in attributes that can be managed for you for users, such as display names, first names, last names, companies, departments, and so on and so forth. Or you can add your own custom attributes about your end users, such as maybe a phone number, maybe a residential location, and those kinds of things. Okay, the kinds of attributes that make sense to your applications. B2C provides email verification, so for example, when users sign themselves up to your B2C instance, either using a local account or a social account, B2C will verify their email address if that's how they're identifying themselves, okay? So there's a check there that email address is owned by that end user. It also supports phone verification as a second factor of authentication. So users having signed themselves up may also register their phone number with your B2C instance, so the next time they sign in, they're protected against a password attack. I've already mentioned UI customizations. Token claims, that talks to the fact that when tokens are issued to your applications as a result of authenticating an end user, those tokens can contain claims about that verified user, that authenticated user. Those claims can be based on built-in attributes, such as the ones I mentioned earlier, first name, last name, and so on, or the custom attributes that you want to manage about those end users for yourself. There's also preview of a reporting API so that you can extract usage counts and metrics and summaries about how your B2C tendon is being used by different applications, by different, you know, and users interacting with different journeys, sign in, sign up, and so on. And maybe you want to report that through a Power BI dashboard, for example, to understand how your tendon's being used and how it's behaving. In fact, we'll demonstrate that tomorrow morning at the deep dive session. You've already interrupted, so ask away.
Social accounts, you left out Twitter, was that on purpose?
Because it's not supported. Yeah, there's five. Not now. Okay. Yeah. Right. So there's five. There's Amazon, yeah. Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, and Microsoft. From an integration point of view, so maybe you're authenticating users and using these extensibility capabilities. From an application integration point of view, in order to authenticate users, you would use an OpenID Connect library of your own choice. Microsoft provide one for ASP.NET and ASP.NET Core applications, for example. They encourage you to use third-party client libraries for your browser applications and your native applications, Android, iOS, and so on. Okay. If you're building Windows applications or UWP applications, Microsoft do provide the Microsoft Authentication Library that you can integrate into those Windows applications to authenticate users against the B2C tenant. If you want to manage attributes about users, for example, or create them for yourselves or delete them for whatever reason, then you can do so through the Graph API, much like you can do with an enterprise directory. Okay, so you can build applications that acquire tokens to manage user accounts through the Graph API and attributes about those users. So before I get into the demos, let me just dive a little bit deeper into the different kinds of accounts that are supported, how you authenticate against them, and how you provide an end-user experience through the management of policies. So accounts, as I've already mentioned, can either be local, managed by the directory that backs your B2C instance, and I'll describe that diagrammatically in a few moments. So it can be a local account, or your end users can link their external social accounts into your B2C instance and sign into those, or sign into your B2C tenant with those external accounts. I've already mentioned the ones that are supported today. Before we mention also that whether end users are creating local accounts or external accounts, you can add an extra layer of security for them by enabling multi-factor authentication using a phone number that either a text message will be sent to or a phone call will be made to. Okay? Enabling multi-factor authentication is as simple as a checkbox, and that is it. Okay? Obviously, a user will have an experience when they're signing themselves up using a local account or an external one to register their phone number, and then on the next sign-in and subsequent sign-ins, they'll be challenged for that. If end users are creating or signing themselves up for a local account, there is also a password reset feature. Obviously, if you have millions of customers, you probably don't want to be fielding calls from them when they've forgotten passwords and so on. So there's a self-service passwords also built into the B2C platform. From an authentication point of view, and if you have experience with developing applications that integrate with either the OpenID Connect or OAuth protocols, then hopefully this is familiar to you, but this is an OpenID Connect authentication request that your end user application will be building up. And those authentication libraries can help you to do so. You'll be building these authentication requests up and redirecting user agents or whatever you might be using, web browsers and so on, to your B2C tenant to sign users in, okay, or sign them up. So much of that is quite standard. The host you're sending the end user or the user agent to is login.microsoftonline.com/your-tenant-name, which I'll show you in a moment, and effectively the authorization endpoint, with a number of OAuth standard authorization request parameters. The one that's a little different, and I guess specific to the B2C platform, is this policy parameter, the P parameter. And I'll describe policies in a moment, but this effectively demands a user journey, in this case a sign-up user journey, to be executed by the B2C platform to sign a user in. Okay? You can also, that's just an arbitrary name. The B2C_1_ is a kind of just a hardwired prefix, but through that policy parameter, you can guide the users on different journeys through your B2C tender, either sign them up, sign them in, reset their password, so on and so forth. Okay. But the rest is standard OpenID Connect and OAuth. So policies, as I mentioned, this is the secret source. Right? So users assign themselves up using a local account or an external account. You know how to build an authentication request up and redirect users to your B2C tenant. Policies is what binds the end user experience together, along with the UI customizations you want to present to the end user, containing your app brand or your product brand. Also combined with the identity providers you want to allow users to sign themselves in with, either using a local account or a Facebook, Google, or Microsoft account. Combined with the account attributes that either you want users to sign up with, such as the first name, last name, and a location, as well as the claims you want to issue and the security tokens to your end-user applications as a result of authentication. The lifetime of those tokens and when the multi-factor authentication will be presented to the end user as well. So I'll walk you through in a few moments how you configure all this. But having configured all of it and providing or specifying a name for your policy, that is what is then used as that P parameter to guide the user through that sign-in or sign-up experience, whatever it is you might be redirecting them to. And this, for me, is where the power of the platform kind of really starts to raise itself up, right? You might imagine that over time there will be more orange circles kind of added to this policy source, okay, as more capabilities are added to the B2C platform. They may be more identity providers, for example. There may be other multi-factor authentication providers that support it, rather than just a phone number, maybe authenticator app, so on and so forth. Okay, so this is really the extensibility platform, the policy framework that is the power behind the B2C platform. Does that make sense for people? Yeah. Any questions about that before I move on? Yeah.
So for each of those identity providers, you have to go to, let's say, Facebook, register an application there.
Yep.
It seems a bit superfluous, but I guess that's the only way forward.
Yeah, you have to do that, but you only have to do it once for your B2C tenant. Okay. And the reason for that is that your B2C tenant has to trust Google or Facebook, and Facebook has to trust your B2C tenant. And I'll actually demonstrate that in a few moments. Just quickly, how policies have a hierarchy, and really what is exposed to your B2C tenant are the policies, the four policy types, if you will, in the top left corner. But below that, in fact, from the bottom up, this is the B2C engine that you've provisioned for yourself. On top of that, B2C engine is a base policy that's managed by Microsoft. Okay, you can't view it, you can't edit it or anything like that. This Microsoft managed base policy kind of declares all the capabilities that I've described, from identity providers through to multi-factor authentication and so on, that are provided to all B2C tenants, not only yours, but yours, his and hers. Okay, so that's the base policy that's shared by all tenants. When you create a new tenant, there's an extension to that base policy that becomes your tenant-based policy, and on top of that, you configure your sign-up policies, your sign-in policies, your password reset ones, and so on and so forth. Right? They're yours to own and manage and edit. Okay, and that's just repeated for each tenant that's created on the B2C on top of the B2C engine. Okay, so I didn't mention this earlier, but it might have been obvious that the B2C platform is a multi-tenant based one, where Microsoft is managing it up to this level, in fact up to this level, and then you're just building your different your sign-in and sign-up password reset experiences and policies on top of that. And this is how it works at runtime. So this is the B2C engine. Through the Azure portal, which I'll show in a few moments, you configure, add policies that represent the sign-in, sign-up, password reset experiences and so on and so forth, and that set of policies is known as your trust framework that's configured for your B2C tenant. Other B2C tenant holders will have their own set of policies that's their trust framework. Okay. So you not only have to register your applications and your policies with the, having registered your applications and your policies with the B2C engine, what that base policy is then in charge of doing is based on what you want to occur when a user signs themselves in or signs themselves up, is that there's, well, I'll go through this step by step, you configure, add your policies, your applications are going to sign an end user in, so they send this authentication request I showed you earlier with the pframer attached to the end of it, okay, that represents one of these policies that's going to be executed by this engine. Yep. Let's assume it's a sign up, a sign in one. When the BC engine receives that authentication request containing that policy identifier, it starts to interact with all that, all what are known as claims providers, interact with all the claims providers required to sign that end user in, if this is a sign up policy, okay? So it might be an interaction with a local account ID provider or a social one. Maybe there's a phone validation involved and other user interactions, and finally an interaction with a directory that backs your B2C in your B2C tenant. Okay? And as a result of all those interactions and the claims that are being sent in and received out of these, a token is issued to your application that represents the authenticated user. That token, in fact, all of these tokens, are JWTs. Okay? So that's a nice little animated slide. The key takeaway here is the B2C engine is, and I don't want to talk it down, a claims engine, an orchestration engine over all these claims providers, whether they be account related or email or phone validation related. The Azure AD directory that manages the local accounts and maybe membership of groups, for example, is just another claim provider that's known to the that's orchestrated by the B2C engine. Okay, and in fact, this interacts with that directory via the Graph API, like you can interact with that directory via the Graph API. So this is how this, hopefully this kind of demonstrates how extensible this engine may become in future, as more triangles and squares are added to the bottom of this slide. Pretty cool. Anyway, demo one. Let me show you how to create one and start paying for it. Okay, I'm in. Do you remember this portal? Gee, I haven't been in it since for a long time. But to create a B2C tenant, you have to start in the old portal, the classic portal. And once you've logged into it, you click New. App Services, Active Directory, Directory, Custom Create. You give it a name, like my session name. You provide it a default domain. And then you choose your country. And then you get a little bit disappointed that you can't create a B2C directory in Australia as yet. There's a list of about a dozen countries you can't create a B2C directory in at the moment. Australia is sitting alongside Syria and Iraq and Iran and some other countries. I don't quite know why we are. Maybe it had something to do with the phone call between Donald Trump and the other day. Anyway, so at the moment, I'll just pause here for a moment. So the first step in the demo, it's already failed. B2C is generally available in North America today, which means you can register your production applications with it, and it will be, you know, met by the GA SLA. North America encompasses Canada, America, and some of the kind of the countries in Middle America there. Okay, it's now in preview, a public preview, in many of the other countries around the world. And there are, as I said, a dozen countries where it's not supported today. Okay, so if you want to integrate a production application with a B2C directory today, you have to choose a North American country in which to host your B2C tenants. So I'm going to choose the United States. I'm going to check this box to say this is a B2C directory, and I'm going to wait up to 2 minutes. The reason country is important, or at least locality, region if you like, is that when I create a directory in North America, Microsoft will guarantee that the information about identities and access and so on will not leave that region, okay? Unlike Azure AD Enterprise, which kind of has a kind of a geo replica everywhere, the data or directory that backs your B2C tenant is kind of geofenced to a region. Okay, that's important from data sovereignty point of view. Yes.
Some industries in Australia are regulated. Their customer information may not leave.
Yes.
Australia.
Yep.
Will that eventually be working correctly when Australia is available?
Yeah. So the question is that organisations in Australia might be bound by some privacy or compliance laws to keep data in Australia. That's probably one of the reasons we might see Australia kind of deployed to last as a generally available service, is that to geofence that to Australia, a tenant to Australia, is required to meet those particular requirements, and the engineering team are quite conscious of that, right? So yeah. That's why I think we'll see with time that there could be a steady kind of deployment of general availability of B2C across the world as they kind of consider and meet all those compliance and privacy security requirements. So that was about 2 minutes. So it's been created, and for all intents and purposes, this what we're seeing here is the Azure AD directory triangle, was at the bottom of the slide, right? Okay? It's a directory that can manage users and groups and so on and so forth. So I can manage users and I can create them, and I can manage groups and create them, and applications. So I can't do anything with domains. I can't integrate an on-premises directory. And I can't do much to configure the B2C directory. In fact, it won't even load the page. Oh, there it is. I can maybe change the name. But having created this new directory, you won't spend any further time in the classic portal, right? So I'll close that, in fact. What I'm now going to switch to is if I go to the current portal, the new portal, and I signed in with the same subscription administrator account, and I scroll down to this B2C directory, which is the one I created, and change to it. And if I then find my resource, oh, sorry, it's not listed here. I'll do that in a sec. I'm going to open the Azure AD B2C blade. People can see that the text at the back, can they? Is that large enough? It's preparing it, whatever that means. And what I'm expecting to see is a warning message to indicate that this, well, there it is, that an Azure subscription is not linked to this B2C directory or this B2C tenant, and that needs my attention. So what I'm going to do, and the online docs kind of walk you through this step by step, and it's a little bit confusing, is I'm going to add B2C from the Azure marketplace to an Azure subscription so that this usage of this B2C tenant, which I've created, can come part of the billing container, being the Azure subscription, right? So just watch this very closely. It's a bit of magic. So I'm going to switch back to the directory that backs my Azure subscription, of which I'm the administrator of. And then I'm going to click New and search the marketplace for B2C. There it is. And then I'm going to click Azure Active Directory B2C and click Create. Okay, I thought I'd create it. Whatever. Now, what it's doing here is, because I'm logged in as chris.padgettlive.com.au, it's searching for all the Azure AD B2C tenants that I've created or I'm an administrator of, right? And there is the one I created 5 minutes ago. And I can add it to a new resource group. And that resource group is going to be located in Australia. The directory isn't, but the resource group is. And I'm going to create that. Now, what this is doing is creating that resource group as well as a B2C resource, kind of in Azure Resource Manager speak, that is then linked to the directory I created in the classic portal. And all that's required so that Microsoft can begin billing me for the usage of it. Okay? Yep. So if you want to host a integrated production application, you have to go through that both that creation and link step in order to get onto a generally available platform. So that's it for creation and linking. You only have to do that once. Now, the next thing I'm going to do is show you an app that I've developed, and I hope to have a little bit of time at the end that will explain how I've developed this application, or at least I've integrated it with the B2C tenant. It's a game rental website. It's developed on the ASP.NET core, not that that matters. And what I want to do is, as a consumer of this site or this service, game rental service, in which I can buy or rent Xbox games by the looks of it, I want to put some functionality behind that login button, right, to allow users to sign themselves in or sign themselves up if they're a first-time user, possibly reset their password if they've forgotten it, right? Now, when I click login now, I've kind of got this kind of intermediate page, which is for demonstration purposes. I wouldn't show this on a real website. This really just lists all the policies, kind of that secret sauce that I'm going to create in the B2C tenant that I created a few minutes ago, right? And there's a bit of a descriptor there. So, for example, the one I'm going to concentrate on today is what's known as a unified policy, one in which users can sign themselves in with a local account or click through to Google or click a link to go and sign themselves up as a first-time user. All right, kind of a unified policy that kind of branches out to different journeys after that. That's called a unified policy or a sign-up or sign-in policy. So this is really just listing out the different interactions or the different journeys, the different policies I can execute against the B2C tenant that I've created, and nothing more than that. So when I click this, login, I get an exception because I haven't configured the unified policy as yet, right? But what it was attempting to do was the application was attempting to download metadata about the policy that's to be executed, so it knows where to redirect the end user to, knows how the tokens are going to be signed, and all these kinds of things, right? So we'll start to kind of build this up as we go through the demonstration. So let me start building that up. In fact, what I'll do is I'm going to build it up in a pre-created tenant because I'm going to use this tenant tomorrow in the deep dive session. So, and the policies I create now are going to be reused tomorrow. So this is my Ignite 2017 tenant. I'm going to go to the B2C settings blade. And the first thing I want to do is register my web application, the game rentals site. Okay, so I start at the top. In fact, I'm just going to start at the top and go to the bottom. I click Applications, I click Add, we'll be using these two applications tomorrow. I give my application a name. I indicate it's a web application that supports, for me this is misnamed, Allow Implicit Flow. This should actually be Allow OpenID Connect Flow. And I'm going to provide a number of reply URLs or redirect URLs to which the beta tenant can issue tokens as a result of signing users in or signing them up or whatever. Now, to prevent any mistyping, I'm going to just copy these. One thing to be aware of here, as I copy and paste, is, and I'll describe why there's so many of them in a moment, but if you have an application that you host on multiple domains, maybe contoso.com and fabricam.com. It's the same application deployed twice. You can't register multiple domains in this reply URL list where those domains differ at the root level. So you can't register contoso.com and fabricam.com. You would have to register those as two different applications, even though physically they may be the one application, just listening to two different hosts. Okay. So I've registered each of the redirect URIs that will come a little bit special later, and I'm going to create that application. And what that's doing is, if you're used to this when you're building enterprise applications with Azure AD B2E, kind of the classic Azure AD, this is just creating an application entity in the backend backend directory, and as a result, assigns a unique identifier to it. So I just click through on that. I'm going to copy the application ID into my code, which is not foo, is that. And while I'm here, I'm also going to generate an application secret by clicking Generate Key, clicking Save, and a much easier secret to use than the enterprise directories. And in essence, that's all I need to do to register my application with a B2C tenant, and as a result of that, an application ID and optionally a secret being generated that I can copy and paste into my application code so that the two can trust each other, basically. Okay. So these are the three constants that your application has to be aware of: its ID, its secret, and the tenant that it's been registered with, and that's about all it needs to know. So that's the application. That was simple. I hope I've forgotten anything there. I don't think I have. Next, I'm going to move on to the identity provider. And what I want to show you here is I want to enable users to sign up and sign in using a local account that is specified or keyed on an email address. Alternatively, I can allow them to use a username such as cpadge or something like that. Yeah. But I'm going to choose email address because I want to show you the email verification. And this is where I want to add Google as an external IDM provider. Right? So I enter a friendly name. I choose Google as the IDM provider type. And then I'm going to have to provide a client ID and secret that's provided by Google to register this tenant with Google so they can trust each other, right? So let me walk you through that. I've created a Google project, okay? And it's called Ignite 2017. In that project, I'm going to generate the client ID and secret that's required to register this B2C tenant with Google. Okay? So I'm going to go to this Credentials tab. I'm going to say I'm going to create a new credential for use by an OAuth client, the OAuth client being the B2C tenant itself, not my application, but the B2C tenant. It says before you do that, you're going to have to configure a consent details, and I'm going to give my product, my B2C tenant, a name and an email address on which people can send abuse to, presumably. And then once I've provided the consent details, I then need to register my B2C tenant as an OAuth client, it being a web application. I'll just give it the same name as I did earlier. And there's a couple of fields that have to be entered, and they are case sensitive. The first one is this authorized JavaScript origins, which I have to use this name here. This is common to all B2C tenants, not only yours, but all B2C tenants. And then a redirect URI to which Google can issue security tokens to my B2C tenant to sign a Google user in, right? So this will be specific to my B2C tenant. So it's this one here. Hopefully you can see that. It's right at the bottom of the page, unfortunately. But this authorised redirect URI includes my tenant name. Okay, could be a tenant ID as well, the tenant name. And if I click Create, Google generates a client ID and secret for me. So I'm going to copy that from there to here. And a secret. So I'll copy that from there to here. Click OK. And I'm hoping that will work when I sign up using my Google account a little bit later. Okay, so you it's a similar experience whether you're registering Facebook or Microsoft as a social identity provider. You have to create an OAuth client register an OAuth client with those identity providers and then provide those IDs and secrets to your B2C tenant. Right, what's next? What's next is user attributes. So I mentioned earlier that this allows you to manage profiles about users. There are quite a long list of built-in attributes that you can use. You don't have to use all of them. What I want to use for my gaming rental site are two custom attributes, one called gamer tag. I don't play games, I'm just assuming these are well-known attributes about users. So a tag for users or gamers to identify themselves with, as well as what I'm calling the gamer zone, which He's going to allow a new user to specify what kinds of games they enjoy playing, maybe family games or recreational games or maybe underground games. And as a result, the web, you know, the games that are offered to them on the home page will differ based on that preference. Okay, so that's created two custom attributes for me that I want to manage about in my user profiles. Right, any questions up to there before I dive into policies?
Callback URLs.
Callback URLs, yes. You can use different subdomains within the same root. So you might have foo.contoso.com and bar.contoso.com. So if you're building a multi-tenant app and you use the subdomain as the kind of the tenant identifier, you can register all those subdomains through here. Yep. Yes?
So where did you get that callback URL from?
The one that I showed in the applications list. So if I click through here, this long list here.
You copied across.
This one here?
Yeah.
Yeah. The BC team have some good online documentation about how you register Facebook, Google and other IDM providers with your B2C tenant. This is just one of the properties they specify. You have to follow this particular format structure to enable that trust. That's right. Yep. I just copy and paste it from their docs to my notepad and then from there to the portal. Yeah. I'll describe these different ones later once we dive into the application code. Okay, so what I want to do, I might just shortcut to the policy I'm going to use, which is the sign up or sign in policy, otherwise known as the unified policy. So this is going to be the one that on the top half of the login page that the user is redirected to. They'll be able to choose Google as a social account they can sign in, or they'll be able to sign in using their local username and password that they may have signed up with, or they can click a link to either forget their password or sign themselves up as a first-time user. So it's kind of unifying that experience for them. Now, to create one of those policies and kind of glue all these things together, you know, the application, the IDM providers, the user attributes, whether MFA is on or off and all those kinds of things, I'm going to add a new policy called Unified. I'm then going to click IDM providers and indicate I want them to use a local account that uses an email address or use their Google account. If they're going to sign themselves up as a first-time user, I want to collect a display name, an email address, a gamer tag, a gamer zone, and that should be enough. The tokens that are issued to my application will contain claims called display name, email addresses, gamer tag, gamer zone, what else is in here? User is new user's object ID, so the unique identifier for the user who signed themselves in or up. I'll also include the IDM provider. Just for fun, I'll just check that I have phone reception in here. Yep. I'll turn multi-factor authentication on. And I'll come back to the page customizations later. But by creating that, remember my diagram with policy in the middle with all the orange circles around the outside, that's really just configured that blob of stuff known as a policy. And that's ready to go. So at this point, I should be ready to go. So in my application, I've copied and pasted the application ID, the application secret, and the tenant name. When I run it, and click the blue login button, I'm hoping that I'll be able to sign myself up. Just got to wait for my ASP.NET Core application to compile. Okay, here we go. Fingers crossed. Log in. I'm going to choose the unified policy. So what I will just show you at this point is even though I just entered unified as a policy name, it's actually prefixed by BTC_1_, right? So that's the name I've got to use in my application code when the user clicks this login button. Right, it's waiting for login.microsoftonline.com. Got this far, which is good, okay? I don't spoil the demo. Ah. Yeah, go ahead.
Can you customize sort of the UI there, or even URL?
You can't. I'll answer that one later, once I'm off the microphone. But you can customize this HTML page and the ones that follow, and I'll do that in my next demonstration.
That question would be answered on user voice.
Yes, there's a user voice a feature that you should upvote on that. Yeah. That's the official answer for it. Anyway, so this is just to cover this off again. So because I've configured local account and Google as IDM providers, they get to sign in using their local account or their Google account or sign themselves up. Okay. So I'm going to sign myself up for a local account with which I'm going to register my cloud email address. And because email verification is required by default, you can turn it off if you wish to do so. I'm going to go to my inbox and wait for the email verification message to arrive. I hope this works. No, all good. Thankfully. I'm going to enter that 6-digit verification code and verify it. That's successful. I'm going to enter a password that meets the minimum requirement. Password 01. I'm calling myself Padge. The gamer zone. I'm going to say I'm an underground gamer. I'll show you how we can improve this experience in a moment. I'm going to enter Padge as my gamer tag, and my real name is Chris Padgett. I'm going to create my local account. And as a result, I've got an MFA. Sorry, I forgot about that. I can choose Australia as a country code. I'll enter my phone number. Feel free to call me later, not too early in the morning, after tonight's party. And I'm hoping that I'll get an SMS, which I have, 819682, which is successful. And it's a little hard to see, but it's redirecting to my app, and I'm signed in. And the bot, I closed the window. Let me just sign in as that user. Oops. Because the MFA is on, I'll receive another text message. It can call me as well, and I can answer a friendly phone call from Microsoft. Just wait for this one to come through. I'll try not to close my browser this time. What I did want to show you, Control-4, is in this kind of user profile section up here, I'm reading claims from the token that's been issued to my application as a result of signing me in. So it contains my display name, and my email address, and my gamer tag, and my gamer zone. Right? Might be obvious, but all these games are underground games. That games list has been filtered based on my gamer zone preference. If we want to have a look at the claims that were issued in the token from the B2C tenant, they're listed here. I'll just lock this up a little bit. So if you are integrating applications with Enterprise Direct Azure AD today, Enterprise, then you might be familiar with many of these claims, such as the issuer of this token being my B2C tenant, when it can be used from and to, which are the top two claims, when the end user was authenticated, this is an epoch time, those custom attributes that I've added to my B2C tenant to track users' gamer tags and gamer zones, my name and my email address, for example, It also includes the policy name that was used to sign me in this particular case. Okay, I may want to change the end user experience on not only the gamer tag or zone, but maybe on the policy that was executed. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. So to improve the experience a little bit, I want to not only to bring a branded login page, sign-in page, but I want to make that sign-up experience a little bit easier where I didn't have to type in the well-known string of underground for the gamer zone. Yeah. So, yes?
Sorry, can you plug that into Authenticator?
Not as yet. It only supports a phone number, so a message or a call. Yeah. So I'm going to return to my sign-up or sign-in policy. Actually, this is a... While I'm doing that, this is a... Once a policy has been created, you can test it without having to build kind of a consumer application in front of it. Okay, so this is a unified policy. By clicking through on it, so I can choose an application that I want to sign the user into. This is the one I added earlier on a redirect URI. And you can run that policy as if the user was signing into that application. Okay, maybe to debug the policy or fix the HTML before you actually kind of build it into your application itself. I want to edit the policy, and what I'm going to do is a couple of things to the page UI in order to customise it. Now, what I've done in advance and what I'll show you how to do tomorrow is I've uploaded some HTML files to an Azure Blob storage account blob container, and again, because I don't want to bore you with typing all of that in, I'm going to customise not only the first page that had Google local account sign in and sign up, but also each of the sign up pages themselves, as well as the multi-factor authentication page. Okay, that issues the phone number challenge. So I've got four HTML pages to refer to. This is the first one. Oops, that's not it. Yep. Done. For the local account sign up, which is what I click through to sign up my cloud account, I'm going to use this next one. Okay, and while I'm here, I'm going to customize these labels, right? Because I don't like the lowercase kind of rendition of them. So I click through on gamer tag, and the label I want to show above the input field is gamer tag. And it's required, which is fine. It's a text box, that's good. For gamer zone, I'm going to change the label. And rather than being a text box, I want to make it a drop-down list to make it a bit easier for the user. So maybe they want to choose professional. Oops. Or underground games, as an example. And these are obviously values that are known to my application. I can issue in claims or query later to customise the end user experience once they've signed into my site. I OK that. I'll OK this. Oh, what I can also do here is I can move these fields around. So maybe I want that first. Sorry, first. Then the display name. Then their tag. Something that flows a little better. Social account sign-up page, so I'll show you an example of this in a moment. The experience around this, I'm going to use the same HTML template that I used for my local account sign-up page. And multi-factor authentication, just for completeness, is this one here. Yes, I want to customise that with that HTML page. And they're just HTML pages, right? However, there's something a little bit special about them. There's a div in the middle of them with an ID called API. And what the B2C tenant will do to load my page UI customizations into the sign-in or sign-up experience is effectively load JavaScript that will load my HTML layouts from my blob storage and then look for that div ID equals API, and then kind of dynamically add the input fields that are required for the user to interact with that page. Now, for me to style those input fields, for example, There's some online, again, the online docs describe in detail exactly what styles are attached to each of those elements so that you can bring your own style sheet as well. Okay. So each of these HTML pages that I've specified here, that HTML has a HTML element, a head element and a body element. The head refers to the CSS file that I want to bring along with this HTML file. Okay. You can't bring JavaScript with it, only CSS. Okay? Otherwise, you'll be running your JavaScript on Microsoft's domain, which I don't think they'd like. So let me OK all that and remember to click Save.
So that CSS will enter the complete URL?
Yes, the CSS will be the fully qualified URL. That's right. And I'm just serving it for the same blob container. Yep. So let me start again. So that's customized, I'm hoping. So here we go. Let's see if it works. So log in to Unified Policy, which I've customized. It works. Right? So that's loaded this is known as the claim selection provider page, the one that provides this. That's loaded my custom HTML, which is loaded with referencing my custom CSS. The div ID equals API is kind of in there somewhere. So the B2C engine has dynamically added these HTML elements to the page, my HTML page that's loaded from my storage account, but I have full control over the styling of that. Okay, so that's quite nice. I can click through to Google and I can use this Google account to sign myself in. This password that I don't want to stay signed in with. People might know what's about to happen here. Yep. I'll just check that off because I don't trust it. Okay, so I'm assigning myself into Google. Now, what I want to show you firstly is this, right? Because this is me signing in with my Google account to a B2C tenant that called Wingtip Toys. I've got a consent to that, so I'm going to allow that to happen. And because I'm a first-time user bringing my Google account, I have to sign up for my user profile. Page 2, I'll just maybe make this more obvious later. And here's my drop-down list that I customised a little earlier. I continue. That's a little hard to see, but that was... And because I'm extra conscious about security, I'm going to hit MFA on this as well. I'm hoping this will be improved soon. Insofar as if I'm signing myself in using my Google account and there's MFA on that, if Google is able to tell B2C that MFA was performed, then that MFA challenge wouldn't be presented to me. So many six-digit verification codes drives me crazy. Okay, but that was the customized MFA page, and I'm signed in as page 2. And is it in here? You can see here that the ID provider that I signed myself in with and up with, oh, I've lost it, is here, google.com. This was one of the other claims, new user is set to true. That I issue as part of this sign-in, sign-up policy. So maybe as a result of receiving this claim, this token validated, reading that particular new user claim, I may want to present the user with a first-time, first-time user experience, yeah? Yeah. Any questions on that so far? Pretty cool. Kind of cool. Almost 30 minutes and I was done. Yes?
The name that you originally registered with Google, the subscription, that name has to be very well thought out because that's going to be exposed to the user as well.
Correct. So on that consent page, when I clicked allow, it said MSFT Ignite AU 2017 at the top. So if this is Wingtip Toys, then you probably want to, when you configure your Google client, your B2C client with Google, you want to have a representative name of your product or your brand. Yep, cool. One other thing I will show you, and we'll dive deeper into this tomorrow. I'm just checking where I've got many other slides to do. No. Is user management. So I'm going to close a few of these blades until I return to this main one, the B2C settings blade. Click users and groups. Okay, and in fact, what this is doing is framing in the Azure AD enterprise users and groups blade, right? The one you might be using to manage your enterprise users and groups for your enterprise applications and services. If I click all users, here are the two users, or these are the two users that I signed up with. Right? And from here on in I can maybe, if I wanted to, initially manage their profile and so on and so forth. I would avoid doing any of this though. You really don't want to have to manage users, certainly on a scale of thousands, if not tens or hundreds of thousands of users. That administration feature is available to you. What you can also do, I might just open up, I don't know if anyone, many of you use Graph Explorer. Oh, that's not right. Graph Explorer is quite a basic application developed by Microsoft that allows you to interact via the Graph API with an Azure AD directory. In this particular case, the directory that backs my B2C tenant in which I'm signing users up and into. So what I'm going to do is click Login. And I'm going to log in with an account I created earlier. That's wrong. This is my global administrator in my B2C tenant. Okay. And this allows me to kind of explore the different Graph API endpoints from a directory point of view. So I can get a list of users here. Yep. This interface has changed recently. And if I just zoom in a little bit, this is the raw response from the Graph API. Microsoft, of course, provide a Graph API client that you can integrate into your application so you can query the same endpoints. Which leads me to one last thing to do, which is to quickly show you how I've integrated this application from an authentication point of view with my B2C directory. So other than specifying an application ID, an application secret, and a tenant name in this case, all I had to do was... where do I start? Add this Microsoft.ASP.NET Core.Authentication.OpenID Connect dependency. This is an ASP.NET Core application. And configure it up with a few parameters, which I do in my startup class. So in the startup class, when the configure method is called, I configure... multiple instances of the OpenID Connect authentication middleware, effectively one for each policy that I want to execute against the B2C tenant. Okay, so many of the I'll show you this the method implementation in a few moments, but the difference between each of these is essentially just the policy name and description I want to configure each of those middleware instances with. Okay, and because I configure it four times, they effectively represent the four blue login buttons I show when I'm demonstrating the policy functionality. If I go to this method, this is creating an instance of the OpenID Connect authentication options class, or OpenID Connect options, where the authentication scheme is set to the policy name, and I'll show you why that's important in a moment. The callback path for this authentication middleware is the policy name dash callback. And because I've registered four of these authentication middlewares with different callback endpoints, that is why over here, I just got to get out of all this. Each of these redirect URIs that I configured for an application in the B2C blade represents each of those authentication middleware instances. Yeah? Each kind of uniquely identified by the policy name that they manage. The client ID and secret is the same for each of these authentication middlewares. If I have time, I'll explain this horrid mess here in a moment. And as a result of handling a token that's issued by B2C, as a result of a sign-in and sign-up policy execution. The result of that will be an application cookie middleware will be executed, will be invoked to keep that user signed into my application, okay, until they sign themselves out, which is why also in my configure method, I configure cookie authentication, right? Just one little trick to be aware of here. That cookie configuration authentication middleware has to be, or service, has to be configured before these ones. So if these ones issue a sign-in request to the cookie middleware as a result of handling a token from B2C, then this has to handle it before the cookie is returned to the browser to keep the user signed in. So let me explain the little bit of mess at the bottom. In fact, I'll just quickly run the code again and show you what it's trying to do. It's effectively trying to handle errors, remote failures, from B2C as a result of a user action, such as clicking a cancel button during a sign-up flow or clicking forgot your password. It seems a bit odd, but I'll walk you through that now. So I'll put a couple of breakpoints in here. And let's see what happens. Actually, just before I do that, when I list, let me find it. All of those the blue login buttons, when they're clicked, that's posted back to this external login method controller action, with the authentication scheme that matches one of the authentication schemes that would be configured here, effectively an authentication scheme representing the policy name. So when I click that fourth button for B2C _1_unified, right, that button submit will post to this external login controller action with an authentication scheme of B2C _1_unified. And all this does is creates a challenge result that's handled by this piece of middleware to redirect to the B2C tenant. Okay, let me quickly run this to walk you through this error handling. And what I'll do is I'll just start all my browser sessions again to be sure. So as I said, this is to handle errors that are caused by either 500 errors from B2C, which hopefully don't occur too frequently, or users clicking actions that cancel a policy execution, such as a sign-up flow. So I click the execute the unified policy. Okay, and I'm going to click forgot your password. And rather than just redirecting me to the forgot your password page, it's actually going to return an error code to my application code, right, which I want to handle properly, which is here. Bit strange, but whatever. So what it's returned is an error, a little hard to see, sorry. Access is equal to access_denied. And the error description is quite a long one, but somewhere buried in there is an error code, AADB, blah, blah, blah. The user has forgotten their password, right? So what I want to do is remember that, so that later when I get a chance to kind of short-circuit the authentication middleware handling this response, this token authentication response from B2C, I can send the user to the forgot password controller action, right, which is over here. Redirect them. That redirect has occurred. We're now going to challenge our authentication middleware with a password reset policy, which hopefully is going to, well, I haven't configured that, but that would return them to B2C to forget their password by entering their email address, to which they'll receive a 6-digit verification code, which they'll enter, verify, and enter their new password and be signed in at that point. Yeah. So I don't believe any of the Azure AD B2C samples contain that little bit of logic, so I'll make sure I make it available to you, because that's a little trick to just work around that forgot password error. I suppose it's an error, a user error. Yeah. So that's it with the demo. Just let me return to the slides just to wrap it up and take any final questions. As I mentioned earlier, you know, you can consider the B2C platform a highly available one that, and one that can scale to massive numbers of identities and accounts. Really, the core of B2C is making sure the identity interactions that your end users are having with your applications are as customised and delightful and seamless as possible. And in order to do that, you just need to wrap your head around policies, which, as I mentioned earlier, is really the secret sauce to enabling all this functionality of the B2C platform to make it available to your applications and your users. Yes, question?
Can you, via API, maybe the Graph API, modify the email and the phone number?
So the question was, via the Graph API, can I modify the email address and the phone number? The answer is no to both. Yep. They're kind of considered verified properties, right? You can use the Graph API to, and we'll discuss this tomorrow in depth, how you migrate perhaps from an existing identity store into a B2C directory in order to cut your application over. But once an email address and or a phone number has been verified, you can't modify it. Only the end user can do that.
So if the customer changes one of those, they're kind of stuck with that the original identity,
yep,
unless they set up a new account.
Yep. I think, I can't quite remember off the top of my head. I can check it out for you. There's another policy type called profile editing policy. And I believe, I seem to remember through that, I will double check that you can change your email address. Yeah, but don't take my word on that. Maybe check it out for yourself. Yeah. Yes?
Is the phone number exposed?
No. Like with it, so the question was, is the phone number exposed through the user profile? So that MFA functionality is effectively backing onto, you know, enterprise MFA that you get with your Office 365 directory and so on. Even via the Graph API for an enterprise directory, you can't modify those verified attributes of a user, such as their phone number or their authenticator app secret key and those kinds of things, right? They're hidden from you as an application developer. Yeah. Yes?
Is there any ways to assign users to groups based on the way they've signed in?
Yep. The question was, can you assign users to group? Yes. If you want to do that at a large scale, go for it. The only limitation is that you can't nest groups within groups. I would suggest that, you can, if you want to kind of, allow, maybe build a community site based around group membership, then, go for it. But there are some limitations of that group membership functionality that is available in the enterprise directories, not consumer directories. Yeah. One of the things that I will mention is that there is a sign-in policy. The one I demonstrated to you today is kind of the sign-up or sign-in policy. You probably want to begin your B2C experience with the unified policy I demonstrated today. The sign-in policy is limited in how much you can brand it. It doesn't have any labels on the page, like username and password, and hintful tooltips, for example. So it was one of the first policies that was made available on the B2C platform to make the platform available for users to sign themselves into, but I would avoid using that particular policy, the sign-in policy. Yeah. Yes?
Does this work with multi-tenant apps?
Does it work with multi-tenant apps? No. But as I mentioned earlier, you only have to register your application once, and if your application has different subdomains that it can handle traffic to, then it will work in that particular scenario. But it's not multi-tenant as you know it in an enterprise directory. Yeah. There's no administrator consent in this, for example. Yeah.
Sorry. What about keeping users signed in, especially if they're using their Google account? Do you have to issue refresh tokens or get refresh tokens in order for that to happen?
So the question's,
keep them alive.
Yeah, the question was how you keep users signed in, because Google likes to do that, Facebook likes to do that. So there's a number of things that govern the authentication session, and again, we'll walk through this in detail tomorrow. The session cookie is one, but that will obviously be destroyed once the window is closed. But there's really no persistence across sessions available to you at the moment. Right? What you can control is if you have application one and application two, and you want to provide single sign-in to the second one once they've signed in the first one, that's available to you by default. But you may want to change that behaviour so they always have to sign into app B, for example, or always have to sign into a particular policy regardless of the application they're signing themselves into. So there's a few toggles and levers and configurations you can use, but nothing to keep users signed in with. Yeah. Yes.
I can't remember Kubernetes. Was multi-factor authentication a user option?
Yeah, question was multi-factor authentication a user-level option? The answer is no. It's either on or off for a policy. Yep. So I create a sign-up, sign-in policy enabled multi-factor authentication, so all sign-ins to that policy or sign-ups to it, users are met with the MFA challenge. Presumably I've kind of targeting an end-user audience that perhaps have mobile phones. It's certainly a consideration, right? But we might be able to expect in the future that those kind of that might become available at a lower level. Any further questions? Again, thank you for joining me. Have a fun time tonight. See you tomorrow.